Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome to week 8 of Bachelor in Paradise, where metaphors really become reality.
After weeks of hurricanes Demi, Mari, Tammy, and so on, a very real tropical storm makes landfall in Sayulita and causes the same amount of damage and disturbance as a woman having negative emotions in public.
Yeah, pretty much the same amount of fallout, yeah. I would say. Meanwhile, the end of paradise is rapidly approaching, and the whole beach is just starting to get that, like, bar on a Saturday night at like 1:30 a.m. It's almost closing time sort of vibe, as all the desperate singles are just trying to make that love connection before it's too late. Really depressing vibes, I have to say.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of a fun time, Claire. But we will have time to get into all of that. And joining us to recap this week, for the first time ever, romance novelists Tessa Dare and Rebecca Weatherspoon. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. I'm so excited.
Well, we are excited to have you, and we have a lot to get into. Let's dive in.
Yes. So much romance. So much drama. So I know you guys will have a lot of insight. But we open, actually, with some zoology. We open with a night heron eating a crab, as Joe and Serena make out by the water. And so I suppose the night heron represents Joe and Serena's love, and the crab represents Kendall's heart as she watches and is wrecked.
This show loves a very heavy-handed metaphor, and frankly, I'm here for it.
And the metaphor is, like, always a crab being eaten by a night heron.
Yeah, no, they have one note, but they're like, we are going to hammer this home in every scenario possible.
So Kendall, we saw the end of this interaction, the beginning of this interaction last episode. She sees the love connection happening. She gets up to sadly walk away. Ivan is like rejected as he tries to comfort her with an ill-timed kiss. And I have to say, I wasn't sure how people were going to be reacting to Kendall. And it seems like the reactions that we see are pretty sympathetic. I mean, were you guys surprised by this? I sort of thought she might be framed as like, why is she even here? She's the obstacle to Joe and Serena's love story. But people are like, wow, she's really hurting. It's sad to see a good person hurting.
I think I might be the like one unsympathetic person to this whole situation. This is like the one thing that I was like, we need to talk about this. She had Joe's phone number. And I don't want to like jump ahead too much, but like Joe at one point says like, you know, you could have said something before we had plane tickets in hand, you know? Like, she could have called him before this. That's my take on it.
See, I really felt for Kendall. I didn't see her as trying to rekindle as much as I saw someone who knew rationally that a relationship was over, but it somehow struck her really hard just seeing Joe making out with Serena. And I think there's always those moments. Breaking up is like a grieving process and you go through it in stages. And I have a feeling she kind of knew it was over, but it hadn't really come home. And I think it just smacked her in the heart.
I agree 100%. I found it really relatable. And I actually thought that the other people on the beach responded sympathetically, in part because it doesn't actually seem like she has been at all antagonistic to Joe or Serena. It's a little bit hard to say because they completely cut out her entire interactions with Ivan, essentially.
Yeah. We're going to have to talk at various points about the very confusing editing that makes it difficult to know what's going on in a lot of these scenarios. But
exactly.
There's a lot more Joe and Kendall to come. They kind of get the beginning of this episode. But first, Kendall kind of goes to the bar when she leaves the beach and asks Wells, have you ever had to watch your ex kiss someone? And I love this moment where you can see Wells like trying to decide whether JoJo counts. And then he's like, no. And she tells him that she's been crying a lot. She feels like it's been awkward. She's been having a hard time, but she doesn't want to be upset in front of him and Serena. She doesn't want to be like having people bear witness to her struggle.
I felt bad for her in that sense because, you know, Tessa's spot on, like, the breakup aspect of it is so painful. And I did feel bad that she was like hurting, but also I was kind of like, girl.
It's so hard.
They also kind of screwed her by, you know, bringing Joe in original cast and then letting her enter a few days later. Whoever enters later is pretty much always at a disadvantage, and often they don't necessarily know exactly when they'll be coming in when they agree to do the show. So I also sort of wondered whether, like, what those conversations were ahead of time.
They obviously wanted to give Joe a chance to establish something and then to have Kendall be.
And it's interesting. Bachelor Data actually just released a whole graphic of featured screen time for the whole season so far. And like, Joe has had the most screen time by far. And it really feels like the show made a conscious choice to be like, he is the main character and Kendall is an obstacle. And like, I think that's the part that sort of bothered me throughout this entire narrative. But yeah, ultimately Kendall leaves Wells and is like, I guess I need to go talk to Joe.
That night, I was a little bit like, do you need to do it right now, Kendall? Because he and Serena just had a beautiful romantic moment by the beach. And you're like, now is the time for another chat with Joe.
I wonder if she had like kind of already decided that she was going to leave. So she was like, I got to talk to Joe. And then I got to get the fuck out of here.
I don't think she did. That there's a, before she goes and talks to him, I obviously, like, again, we need to talk about the editing, but she says that she thinks Joe is still in love with her.
I wrote this down because I had a similar reaction. One thing I know for sure, I will always love Joe, and I think he feels the same way I do. There's just a hint of ambiguity there, because you can love someone forever, right? Even if you break up, that doesn't mean you're in love with them. But it is like an odd thing to say here. I also don't know if we know exactly when she says it.
Like, I feel like the editing here was like so whack.
Yeah, the editing was atrocious. I was trying to like, because I think too, they're talking to them after a lot of this stuff happens. So I'm sure their emotions are all over the place when they're saying half of the stuff they're saying.
No, I was just going to say, I got the impression that she wanted to hear that Joe was hurting the same way she was. And he was like, not really. but he had that the first few days, like you said, and she wasn't there to see it. He was kind of wandering out around the beach, wondering what he was doing there, thinking about falling in love with Kendall. And he had kind of moved through that. And she was having to move through that while seeing Joe make out with Serena. And it was not quite an equal situation.
Yeah, I think if Joe had arrived and Kendall was like, well, I struggled, but now I'm loved up with a really buff influencer and feeling good about it, Joe would be having a slightly different approach. But they sit. She's clearly emotional. And she says, you know, I can't stop thinking about how we met here. I love the way that we were together. I still feel like you're my best friend. And I love seeing you thriving, being funny, making friends. That makes me happy, but it reminds me why I fell in love with you. So it's also difficult. And he says, are you not over us? And Kendall says, don't ask me that right now. I never stop loving you, obviously. Kendall is just crying into Joe's neck, basically, and being like, I don't want to be this vulnerable in front of everyone here. It's very hard. And he asks why she came. And she says, for the same reason you did, probably. I feel like I'm always going to have love for you. And she says, well, but why did you come here? So this was very confusing to me. This is okay. So this part was when I got really confused, because that does not seem to make sense as her full response to that question.
They definitely cut something here. Like, I agree, it doesn't make sense.
The reason that he came is obviously not because he's always going to have love for her. Like, she's not insane. Like, she's not she knows what's happening, right? She knows he's not right there because he's in love with her.
I think she said something else and then said, I'm always going to have love. I feel like I'm always going to have love for you. Like, I feel that they cut out a chunk there.
But it does really make it seem like she's delusional. Like, she's like, we both came here to get back together, obviously.
And this is what I mean. Like, it felt like a very conscious choice on the part of the show to be like, Joe specifically, and then by proxy of Joe and Serena as the golden couple are like the center of the love story this season. And thus, Kendall, having come in second, is the obstacle. And it's not that it's not like they totally villainize her, but they do make her appear to have come solely to try to get him back and then to like obviously fail and be sort of sent away defeated. And it just felt like they were making that decision so consciously because this conversation was so choppy. It's like they didn't want to include anything that might complicate that takeaway.
I feel like the two of them have had a lot of like miscommunication problems. I was trying to remember when they first got together, and they had some like fits and starts when they first got together. Like it wasn't smooth sailing. Like they didn't just link up and be like off to the altar. Like when they were on Paradise the first time, it was very like up and down. And didn't Kendall at one point like pull away from him? And then
I actually don't think we would have gotten to know Joe and Kendall quite as well if there wasn't drama, because the couples that just go off, we barely see.
I think they have really bad communication issues with each other. And I think that in combination with the editing was making it very extremely confusing. And then you have poor Serena over in the corner who's actually like pretty straightforward and is like, yeah, I trust you and I'm here for you and we're just hanging out. And it was very interesting to see that juxtaposition too. And I think you're right that setting them up as like the love story and giving Joe, you know, a second chance because he was so popular. He was off one night one on Becca's
season. Yes. Most successful night one contestant like ever.
I have to say he's made, I think, some of Bachelor Nation a little cocky about their ability to assess people, because he was eliminated in night one and there was a big push to be like, whenever someone did something bad on the show, to be like, your fave would never, and like a picture of grocery store Joe. And he turned out to seemingly be a pretty good guy. So it was like, okay, but like, we knew nothing about him. Like, he could have been any sort of sociopath. But I think that what we do see with Kendall and Joe is that they're both like still caught up in these, like, especially her, because she hasn't made this new connection. There isn't that experience with communicating through a breakup and like working through some of these issues that come after, like, oh, we're so into each other and we get along well and we have funny jokes together.
And they did it publicly. I think that's the other thing that I mean, Rachel Lindsay said, you know, she was talking about how she had made a complete ass out of herself in prior relationships, but she didn't do it on television. And I think that's also one big thing where it's like, my last breakup was a disaster. And I think if anyone saw that on tape, there would be a lot of questions. I'd get calls from my parents. It would be all kinds of things. So I think doing that on television and then having it played out over and over again on social media, we're sitting here talking about it now. Like, that, what that does to you emotionally, I can't even imagine that. So Kendall did it. She handled it very well, all things considered.
Right? That's what I kept thinking. I was like, this is a literal nightmare scenario. I am always a fucking mess when I go through a breakup. Like, I have no dignity. It's just like, oh my God. Like, all three of the people involved in this, and I think we've said this before, it's just like, they all handled themselves shockingly well. And the fact that it was on TV, I just like,
totally agree.
Wow.
I think the fact that they handled it so well is the reason we got so many Franken quotes and so much confusing editing. I don't think they gave as much drama as the show was hoping to see. And so they had to kind of construct this story out of a lot of snippets of conversation.
I think that's true. They're doing a little like erasure poetry here. So she, at this point, they hug, they say goodbye. I just want to point out that at this point, I noticed that Joe is wearing tube socks with his slides.
It is a favorite look of his.
I want her to take a mental image of that and like carry it with her always and be like, I can do better. I can move on.
Kendall, you don't need to just like move to a much colder climate to have the babies of a man who wears tube socks with slides.
In Mexico. Like, yeah. I think that's the other part. Like, they keep talking about how hot it is. It's like, first of all, you're wearing socks on a beach. Like, what? And it's like wet and sandy and all that. But it's also, according to the cast, 9,000 degrees outside.
I have to think it's because he's the only person on the beach who forgot to get a pedicure. No other thing I can think of. So Kendall heads back to the group and says goodbye to everyone in this way that people sometimes do, where suddenly they just approach the group and are like, anyway, bye. And she says goodbye to her buddies, Becca and Tia, emotionally. We see her say goodbye to Ivan. They say they'll miss each other and they hug. And we just really didn't see any of their relationship except for her looking sad and withdrawn.
I went back to watch the other rose ceremony, and I like I looked down for a second, and I looked back up, and I was like, wait, who did Ivan give his rose to? And I was like, he gave his rose to Kendall?
They were like dating on the beach. Like, you see them sometimes like kissing or like talking in a hammock, but like never with any real substance.
We were robbed of any like romantic fun vibes between the two of them.
Kendall did not get a date card, which I think was a really mean thing for production to do. They were like, go down, have your big talk with Joe, and then just like hang out on the beach. And I'm like, let her have a date card. Take Ivan on a date. We know she was interested in him. Anyway, so she leaves. And in the limo, she is crying a lot. She says Joe is her person. I remember, too, this feeling when you've been in one really serious relationship. You're like, that was the singular person I've ever been close to in that way. And it's very hard to imagine that it's actually over.
I just want good things for Kendall.
This is all intercut with Joe making out with Serena, because after this conversation, of course, he went to find Serena. So they're still
good.
They're in a good place. In his interview, I think we referenced this before, Joe says that if Kendall really wanted him back, she should have told him before he got there. And then he says, because I really, really loved her. And that made me so upset.
I think that was the one part where I was kind of like, I really wish production hadn't like gotten in Kendall's head. Like, I feel like there was a wiser voice somewhere that was like, actually the sensible thing to do is like not have this conversation, not try to repair this on camera. But somewhere in her head, the idea of like, let me go back to paradise, even just to talk to him, even if she wasn't trying to get back together with him, there should have been, you know, a wiser voice somewhere, a friend, something that was like, you should actually talk to him about this in person or on the phone and not in Mexico, you know? And I think that's where I really felt for her in that sense.
Yeah, I think you are right. We also get a little check-in with Ivan after Kendall makes his exit.
Whose feelings have been, like, absent from this whole narrative up until now. Yeah,
I was like, finally, finally an in-the-moment interview with Ivan. And he's like, I should have known. I'm really bummed. And he's like, I don't know where I'm getting a rose from at this point. Like, I want to stay and meet someone else. And I was just like, sir, do you understand there are, like, 4 days left of filming? Like, what? You might just have to like get back on the apps or like slide into some Instagram DMs.
That part made me wonder if we really did miss very much between Ivan and Kendall, because he pivoted really fast from seeing someone he was dating just devastated to, what does this mean for me? But I would have liked to see him have a slightly more reflective hour where he worried about Kendall and how she was hurt.
No, Ivan is like, which he like very quickly moved into like desperation for a rose mode.
That's the thing, is that like, as much as I've liked Ivan throughout his whole time on the franchise, I was like, this is the way that someone talks who wants to be on TV. Like, it's too late to meet someone and make like a real romance work on the beach. That portion of the show
right,
is
but
over.
He's like, I will not be leaving.
And he's like, I want to stay. I just got to get a rose from somewhere. I'm like, Ivan, don't, like, you're making it very transparent that you just want more screen time.
I think it's more vacation time, too. I think it's, you have to remember, this in a way is like a paid vacation, you know? He's like hanging out with his friends or at a resort.
There's a lot of free food. A lot of free food and free drinks. That would get me.
There's a moment when they're getting the little announcement that they have to evacuate. And you can see Abigail being like, can I eat one more fry while I'm getting this announcement before it's too late? And she's like, no, it's too serious. I got to put the fry down. So the next morning, the couples are all canoodling. Joe and Serena are able to finally be happy without Kendall's pain being present. And Dr. Joe and Ivan are just like kind of chilling, trying to figure out how they're going to stay another week. And what do you know? Here's Lil Jon in a bright floral button down with a big announcement.
I loved the bold print. Very, very here for it.
He's like, with Kendall leaving, there's one less rose for the men. So I decided to bring two new men.
Oh, I just love seeing these guest hosts like really working for that vanity paycheck. It's so fantastic.
I feel like the editing too actually did a lot of the hosts a disservice too, because it was like, where are they? What is happening? Why are they only there for like 6 minutes? Or are they there for like a whole week? Like, right. When Titus left, I was like, wait, he got there two minutes ago. Here. Like, he just got there.
This is the thing. It used to be like a running joke about Chris Harrison that he was never there, that he was like off somewhere drinking mimosas and like barely ever showed up on the beach. And they were like, we're going to replace that person with six people. So we're going to divide someone who's barely ever there by six people who are barely ever there. And as a result, it really feels like they just pop their head in for 30 seconds.
No, I'm like, just like let Wells host.
Yeah.
Like, just do it. Just make the call. But we get two new men and all of their many muscles entering the beach. Damar and Ed are here. They're here to romance some ladies.
They are running shirtless toward the group awaiting them on the beach. And Aaron says, at this point, they look shredded. Ed's legs are like two thick Christmas hams, absolutely massive. They would feed a whole village of cannibals. I have to say, when Aaron is not directly, attacking people and engaging in lots of toxic masculinity, he is like pretty funny. I wish he would just like stick to that.
I agree. I loved this.
Be the ham of the beach. Don't be the guy who's constantly like, you want to go, bro? You want to go? You know,
I feel like even when he is threatening violence, he's funny. I love Aaron. And I don't know if he makes my parts tingle, but he makes my writer heart like really fluttery, because he comes out with these vivid descriptions that are just amazing. It's just, you know,
he's like, a Christmas ham would feed a village. I'm like, where are these villages filled exclusively with cannibals? I have so many questions.
It's a very vivid. He has a writerly mind.
He's going to write a romance novel. He's going to be like, Chris Harrison can do it.
Chris Harrison wrote a whole book without a single description, even remotely.
No. I want to read his screenplay. That's what I would love to read from Aaron. He definitely has a gift for these. And even, like I said, even when he's angry, he'll be like, I'm going to fire up the chainsaw and chop off his toes and put him in an advent calendar. I mean, he just goes to these places that are, they stun me.
Yeah, I feel so conflicted about Aaron, because he'll say something like that and I'll be like, Aaron's great. Like, he's so funny. And then like 30 seconds later, he's just starting shit for no reason. But Aaron has to defend his turf, right? Because he's with Chelsea now. They have feelings for each other, according to Aaron, allegedly. And now there's Damar, who he's threatened by. And Damar immediately does grab Chelsea to chat. Ed grabs Natasha for a chat. At this point, Dr. Joe is like, I'm a little sad about this because, like, I really see potential with me and Natasha. And I was like, do you think Natasha feels that way? Like, have you discussed this with Natasha?
Like, Dr. Joe, you really, like, made it clear you weren't that into her by the end of your date. Yeah. You, like, freaked out.
This is the other issue with the editing that is driving me insane. Because I'm like, did you and Natasha not speak to each other at all from the moment you left that date to now? It's so confusing to me how people are not even, like, did Joe not wake up and say, like, hi, Natasha, do you want to talk today? Like,
we'll never know. We may never know, Rebecca.
It's so wild. It's like, how there are hours and hours and hours and hours going by and you're, like, basically trapped on something that's, like, the size of a football field. And you're not even just being like, hi, good morning, and, like, expressing the, like, interest of the other person's existence. It's very strange.
It's so strange. It's like, yeah, they're together all day, and sometimes one of them will say, like, oh, he hasn't talked to me the last couple of days. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you're together all the time. Like, how have you not had a conversation? You are supposedly in some sort of couple. Meanwhile, Natasha is giving interviews where she's like, well, that whole Joe thing was a bust, obviously. And Joe's giving interviews that are like, I think that, you know, Natasha and I have a lot of potential. And I just hope that she doesn't get distracted by someone else. And I'm like, Joe, it's already over. Like, you haven't. Okay. So Joe still thinks that there's something happening, but is clearly not doing a good job locking it down. And Natasha tells Ed that she's available. Meanwhile, Damar has also decided to chat with Marissa, and this interaction is fascinating. He walks her off, and he's like, how you been? So right off, they know each other.
They've clearly, at minimum, been Instagram friends.
They are talking like, let's catch up.
Yeah, she's like, you've been missing the party. Like, we've been waiting for you. We get an interview where Becca's like, yeah, I don't think that she would accept a date from Damar, but Damar was, like, the person that she wanted to see on the beach. And this conversation was so interesting to me because it felt like, from what we see after, it's pretty clear that she does tell Damar that she's with Riley, but they, like, cut that entire part of the conversation in order for us to, like, wonder if Damar was going to ask her on the date. And then it's just like, oh, no, Damar's going to take Chelsea because, like, she's single.
Yeah. So Ed asked Natasha on the date, Damar asked Chelsea. And meanwhile, Marissa is affected by Damar's appearance. She's spiraling a little bit. She's like, now that I've talked to Damar, I wonder if I need more from Riley. And that Riley is good with his actions, but not with his words, which surprised me. I would not have expected that from Riley, who seems great with his words.
I expected that. Because when he was on previously, he was very sweet and he was very kind, but there was elements of, like, we need to get Riley to, like, actually say something of substance. Mm-hmm. And that was when we first learned about his family. When he was on before. So I wasn't too shocked that he was being very chivalrous and kind and sweet and horny. But maybe not getting to the deeper stuff. And maybe she was like,
yeah,
we're licking each other's toes, but, like, we need to have, like, an actual conversation about, like, who we are as people.
What's the difference, though, between licking a toe and having a conversation? You're talking with your body.
If I'm licking your toes, like, you know my social security number. So that's just me. I don't know how they got there.
If I'm licking your toes, you're stealing my identity.
Yeah. Okay? Like, we are married. There's already grandkids. Like,
otherwise, the tube socks stay on, right?
Yeah. That's it. They're protective. Joe's like, I'm not finding myself in this situation. Yeah, I think that I sort of initially interpreted he's not great with his words as being like, he's not giving me, like, affirming words, which I think he does seem to.
That's how I interpreted it.
She's very, like, clear-eyed about what's going on. She's like, I don't want to ruin the fun that we're having by having a conversation because I don't want him to say what I don't want to hear. I was like, yeah.
That's real.
That's real. That's usually what people don't quite realize is going on. And the double date, meanwhile, is painting lessons. So The couples both seem to be kind of vibing pretty well. Damar, mainly because he thinks they look very similar, which, you know, it's true. They do both have dyed hair, hoop earrings, and are hot. And he's like, that's all I need. And she's, you know, she matches up with that.
He's like, yeah, seems like a good fit to me. Hot, dyed hair. Yeah. Like, that's it.
I mean, he's doing his best. He came for Marissa. And not only is she taken, like, everyone else is taken. He's like, I mean, who would say no to Chelsea? Natasha, meanwhile, says that Ed is very hot and has a very hot body. So she paints it. She doesn't really paint the head. She's giving us sort of like guy that you meet on an app DMs you a mirror photo sort of framings.
Classic marble statue that's like been somehow beheaded over time,
yes.
But
yes.
Is still like a beautiful work of art.
Yeah, or like a perfume advertisement where the perfume is just like right over the penis.
Or quite, you know, a few romance novel covers. Quite honestly.
Yes.
True. Very true.
That's so true. I didn't even think of that.
Look, I love all of these creative interpretations. I think that we have really gotten into the art, and that's what this date is all about. Creative expression.
I just watch this show for the art, and you know, it's few and far between, but when it comes, it really knocks my socks off. And on that note, we are going to take a quick break. Can you keep up? I like love it. So Ed is thrilled with this, and then the women paint directly on the men's torsos, and Ed loves that even more.
He's a face paint guy, classic face paint guy.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting moment because Natasha's been like sad the whole time. So it was interesting to see her finally kind of like not sad. And Ed is very specifically like really corny in a certain way, but in like a sweet way. Like he seems like a very sweet guy. And it was interesting to see them kind of like both being really corny and like just giggling together. And I was like, oh, I was like, maybe Natasha's kind of corny and maybe Ed's like her kind of corny guy. And this is actually working.
Yeah, like, I was like, here for it. I'm like, let Natasha just have a one fucking good day. Okay.
I hope that she can have, like, part of me was like, it's hard not to be like, she's like really eager to be happy with someone at this point after the ride she's had. So I'm like a little skeptical, but like, they do seem to be having a really good time. I think that mostly I just remember not liking Ed on the season he was on, but I can't remember why. And it's,
he got a bad edit.
He got caught up in some of the group drama that always happens, and he could still be a perfectly lovely guy.
Yeah. Look, I'm gonna guess that Natasha and Ed are not like end game for each other, but I just like to see our girl getting to enjoy this resort a little bit rather than being like emotionally tortured by a dude.
Meanwhile, back on the beach, Joe is now strumming a ukulele. And I have to say, there is a huge double standard here, because when Connor was strumming his ukulele, everyone was like, oh, that's so great. I love your song, Connor. And when Dr. Joe is strumming his ukulele, everyone's like, what a nerd. That's so like sad that he's strumming his ukulele. I was like, let him live with his ukulele. You know, he's just trying to have fun.
I think poor Dr. Joe is not the most extroverted and has sort of isolated himself.
He came to hang out with his best friend, Brendan, exactly. And that did not work out.
That is something about this show that makes me feel really old, because my generation, I never knew what it was to be wooed by a ukulele, and I never will. It seems like something that's for younger people, and, you know, or was it a banjo? Didn't Joe call it a banjo? Other Joe.
Joe was just wrong about that.
Yeah, Joe was incorrect.
He was wrong.
I mean, look, Dr. Joe is 38.
I have to say.
He's a real elder millennial.
The thing about the ukulele, though, is it hasn't worked for Dr. Joe and it didn't work for Connor. So
the track record isn't fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a thing still to this day.
Is paradise a place for like the shorter, less jacked, sensitive musician. Is this a place where these kinds of men thrive? I mean, these are the kinds of men who I actually in real life would be completely smitten and in love
with.
Oh,
100%.
I mean, like, I have, like, feelings for Dr. Joe. We will get into that another time.
Oh, serious yes. feelings. No, we are all in agreement about that.
I feel like this is just not... When you're, like, competing against, like, Thomas's height and beauty, Thomas is a gorgeous man, or Riley's insane pectorals, like, is there a place for a guy like Joe who, like, might be, like, 5'4"? Like, is there a place for him? I don't know.
We're gonna have to look this up. But Dr. Joe, I think, could have done pretty well if he'd come in earlier. Like, this is a very challenging point in the season to come in. And I think that you have to be the guy that someone is waiting for to be successful at that point. And I don't think he was that for anyone who was available. Natasha, I think, could have been a great fit for him if his friend had left her alone. But that did not happen.
I want Dr. Joe to get the grocer.
Well, exactly. But you need to then he needed to be brought in with the original cast.
Yeah. Missed opportunity.
You're pretty much set up to fail when you come in this late.
Yeah. So... Back on the date, Natasha and Ed are making out. They're really vibing. And Natasha is super happy. She's like, hallelujah, the vibes are here. Things are finally going well. So I will take her at her word. She's into Ed, who I find to be a bit of a dweeb. But she's into it. And so I support it. And I'm happy for her. Meanwhile, Noah is carrying Abigail. Piggyback, of course. That's like the only way women move around on the resort is piggyback on a man's back.
Do you think they're going to get their dainty feet in the sand, Claire?
He wants to leave the option open of being able to suck something off of her toes later.
Exactly. So, like, she can't have her feet all in, like, crab carcasses.
Exactly. So he's carrying her up to a little spot with a hammock and a tray of margaritas. And she's very impressed, even though those seem to be the main things at the resort. Has. And Noah says, you know, it's really time for us to, like, have some serious conversations, like, as couples. And, like, I haven't said I'm falling in love with you to Abigail. So, like, I really need to get off the beach and on a date, you know, so we can talk. This never comes up again. This is where the scene ends. We do not see what happens and we never hear from them again.
I am what so upset happened? That we have gotten essentially nothing from Noah and Abigail. Like, they have just faded into the background, gotten hardly any screen time. Like, they just dangle a thread like this and then just are like, whatever. This is how little we care if you understand what's going on with this couple. We're literally going to tell you that they're about to do something. And then just never return to it.
Yeah, what was the point of this scene? I'm baffled.
Yeah, they're like, duh, here's a nod. We don't care. Look, now let's get to Kenny rubbing sour cream sensually.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Spoiler alert. Yes. Kenny gets a date card that says, are you hungry for love? He asks Mari on the date. Becca asks Marissa, do you think they'll one-up your whipped cream stunt on the date? And Marissa's like, no, I think it'll be more intimate because Kenny's already been, like, really naked all the time. And what's interesting is that the date turns out to be less intimate than their whipped cream adventure because there's just, like, a nice lady at their elbow the whole time that they're licking food off of each other. This poor woman.
I hope she got paid handsomely.
I'm going to be completely honest. I fast-forwarded through the scene. I am, and this translates to romance novels too. I remember I read one romance novel where the hero pours a pixie stick on the heroine and licks it off. And I was like, what? I cannot do food and sex. It makes me so nauseous. So, like, licking, like, chocolate syrup is, like, as far as you can go. When you get to, like, carne asada and, like, guac, I was not like, okay. No.
When someone is like hovering over your naked body, heartily chewing a full mouthful of taco, that's when the sexiness bus has left the station. Like, we're not doing sexy anymore.
Yeah, I was just like, why? Why? Why is it? Have they really, are they scraping the barrel that low for date ideas that they were like, naked tacos seem, they can make some taco jokes.
Yeah.
It was, I hated all of it. I was so upset that there were, like, curdling dairy products near genitals.
I have to say, I made a terrible decision So I normally, like, sometimes I'll usually watch the episode and take notes throughout. But then sometimes I'm like, I'm done taking notes for the night. I'm going to have a snack. Just keep watching. Make a note where to go back and finish the notes. So right before this date, I stopped taking notes. And I was like, I'm going to have some ice cream. So not only was I eating dairy during this scene, I was like, I'm going to have to watch it again tomorrow to take notes. And I felt really, really bad about that decision. And I paid for it.
I mean, these are two hot, gorgeous people who have not been able to keep their hands off each other. And I think this was the least attracted to each other I've ever seen them. They
they really tried to make the most of it. They were like, what a fantasy. What a gift to me that this is what I'll think of every time I eat tacos for the rest of my life. And I was like,
I think that Mari actually describes that as a good problem to have. So she does call it a problem. She's like, I don't want to be thinking about this when I eat a taco. But you know what? First world problem.
I feel like they're really like trying to get their game faces on, being like, this is, yes, definitely very sexy. Extremely sexy. If we just say it enough, it'll be true.
Why couldn't they just send them to like a dance class? Or like, if they were going to do a food related thing, why couldn't they just like have the woman be like, oh, we're just going to show you how to like do tacos the way we do tacos here? Or, like,
make some tortillas and then they could like feed each other. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, we understand Kenny is okay being naked. Like, we get it. It's now like the seventh time.
It's a little one note. I mean, the moment when Kenny has kind of dismounts, he's been like hovering over Mari, who's streaked, her quivering body is streaked all over with dairy. He like dismounts, like chewing, and Chef Dora pops up at his elbow and is like, good taco. I was like, who thought this was a good idea for anyone? This looks like the least pleasant way to have a sexual experience or to be present for one that I can possibly imagine.
They're all going to need to go to some like individual and group therapy after this.
I think she should sue her employer. Who made her do this? Like, this is inappropriate. This is harassment in the workplace.
I was just hoping they don't get food poisoning from it. That stuff looked like it had been sitting there for
quite or like a yeast infection. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah. Harry always wants us to talk about pH levels when these sorts of dates crop up, which is with greater and greater frequency. So just a reminder, as Rebecca says, it is not a good idea to mix food into your sex.
No, don't do it. Yeast infections are like the least of your problem, but don't. It's just, it's really unsanitary. You're going to have to shower afterwards anyway.
I hope they shower. They put back on their nice, cute outfits afterwards.
Yeah, I had questions about Mari's what the sanitation process was.
Yeah, there's a point when Mari is smearing sour cream on Kenny's hairy leg. I was just like, I can't believe they thought this was a good idea. But you know what? Here I am talking about it. So who's the fool here? All right. I'm a little bit traumatized by this discussion, but
let's move on.
After this, they hopefully get to sponge off and relax with their drinks. I hope they got some wet wipes or a shower head or something.
They're ready to DTR.
Kenny says some things that to me are just like pretty serious red flags. He's like, here's a toast to finding something I didn't even know I was looking for. Which is, what thing was he not looking for? The whole thing they're supposed to be there to find, a serious relationship and love. And then he says, in his normal life, finding a wife and having a family has never been a priority, but with Mari, it feels different. So I hope that
this was not shocking that the boy band cover manager was not in a hurry to lock it down and have some kids was not shocking to me.
Yeah, he is a 40-year-old boy band manager who spends all of his time making himself as incredibly buff as possible. So this does not scream, I can't wait to settle down and have children to
me. Right, no, this is a man who is very much like, I'll be able to date 25-year-olds for like at least another 10 to 20 years. So what's the problem? Who's in a rush?
Oh, God. So they talk about how their connection was just immediate, and Kenny says, you know, I can't pinpoint what it is about you, but I just felt very strongly for you very quickly. And for some reason, like, I don't even know.
Didn't he also say something? Oh, no, I might be jumping ahead about his dog.
Oh, yeah. So basically, during this conversation, he ends up saying, at the end of the day, I do feel like I'm falling in love with you. And Mari says, really? That's funny, because I'm falling in love with you, too. And he says, I never say that shit. And she says, when is the last time that you said that to someone? And he says, probably to my dog.
You know what, though? I got this because something about the way that society teaches men is part of that toxic masculinity thing. I think men are more open to expressing emotion with pets than they are with their actual human partners. I have seen my husband cry so hard when our cat suddenly died. And probably the hardest I've ever seen him cry. And it just seems like somehow it's more okay for them to access those emotions where fur is involved. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is, but it's a thing.
I think that's true. That's like, it's okay to say I love you to a dog. It's okay to cry if it's about your sports team. But you can't cry about your relationship. Like, you can't say I love you to the woman that you're in love with. I feel like there's something about the fact that, like, men feel that it's humiliating to express love or care or emotion for someone who might leave them, and mm-hmm, a dog won't no. do that, and a sports team can't. And, like, if a woman gets that from you and then she, like, hurts you or leaves you or disobeys you in some way, then you've been emasculated and made a fool of in some catastrophic way. Whereas for women, of course, it is just our lot to be victimized and to be rejected after caring for someone. So, you know,
them's the breaks, Claire.
It's the dichotomy between. Yeah. No, that's so true. And definitely we get a lot of, I feel like it's funny because this is not how their dynamic played out initially. Like, we see him being all in and her like pulling away a little bit. But when you see them happy together, I do feel like there's a very strong vibe of her as like the caretaker, like the calm, serene angel who's like, yes, I am falling in love with you, of course. Like she has almost like a maternal demeanor with him, like very soothing, very calm, very sweet, very angelic. And whereas he's like nervous and like sucking his teeth and like looking down. And like, I do get this like very, like, caretaker, caretakey vibe from them in these moments.
Mari reminds me of, I'm going to bring up J-Lo and Ben Affleck for a minute.
Please.
Because
please do.
I've tweeted about this, like, ad nauseum.
I think you mean
Bennifer. And I am rooting for them. Like, I want them to make it to the altar so bad.
No, I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
I'm from New England, and Ben reminds me of, like, white dudes I know from New England and white dudes I know from Massachusetts who, like, married the girl they were dating freshman year in high school, right? Like, there's just those certain people, and, like, you guys know those people from your high school who just, like, locked it down. And Ben Affleck has been searching for the woman to, like, actually lock it down with forever, and that person is J-Lo. They couldn't get it together the first time, but, like, that is the person. Mari reminds me of the girl in that equation. She reminds me of the girl who, like, would have married the person she met when she was 15, but they just, like, couldn't get it together. And she is looking to be a wife. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But she has this energy of, like, I am looking to be a wife. And I think when Kenny came on the scene and had that kind of, like, chaotic energy that she was like, I can tame this and take care of it and build a home with it, which is like, I don't think this is gonna go the way it's gonna go. But it's really interesting to see her, like, she's already settled in, like you said, she's settled into this like wife mother role with Kenny, and he is just doing his kind of chaotic thing and being naked and talking about his dog and stuff. And I'm interested to see how this plays out, because it either goes down in flames or it ends up in a Dean Caitlin situation where she is now hitched to Kenny, but they're not living in a house. They're on a tour with his boy band.
Yeah, I think she's going to have to be open to that vision looking a little more compatible with his boy band manager lifestyle. It actually strikes me as quite like a romance novel narrative as a consumer of romance novels, like, or dynamic. The older, like, sort of, I can't really be in a relationship. I've never really thought about love in that way, but like, I'm incredibly riffed and interesting and sexy. And oh, look at this beautiful, sweet woman who changes the whole way I perceive love. And the great thing about romance novels is you can like experience that narrative, but probably in a way that it would never work out in real life. But Mari and Kenny are like, maybe we can make this work in real life. And we'll get that check-in in like 5 years where they're like having afternoon sex and like their 17 kids are playing in the yard.
I believe it, the way they look at each other. I believe it. I believe that they are falling in love. Yes. Okay. I believe that they are feeling.
Yeah. I think they are definitely genuinely into each other.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think it could work out.
He might at 40 finally be ready to settle down.
Exactly. You know,
it's possible. I'm not writing them off.
I just don't know if the vision is actually going to be. I don't know if the vision is going to be what Mari's vision is right now.
Right. I think that's the biggest question.
Like, they could grow old together. I just don't know if it's going to look the way that Mari thinks it's going to look right now.
Yeah, probably not.
So back at the resort,
they go to the boom boom room.
Of course.
Not just that, they have a very romantic, calm walk into the boom boom room for a romantic evening together. Just wanted to call that out. Good for them.
Good for them. Look, we love to see it.
Yes.
Glad they're having fun. Yes. Meanwhile, back at the resort, we're getting into the very tepid Tia, James, and Blake love triangle. James is like, I got to shoot my shot. I got to put in some effort here. And so he's like set up a little scene to remind
a
Tia
diorama
of home. Yeah, he's like, Wiener, Arkansas. I know things about that, maybe.
At least it wasn't a hot dog, I have to say. Could have been worse. Or a dick pic.
Did he just pull two art pieces off the wall and make up a story?
They came up with this idea. They had a PA, like, super. They were like,
exactly.
Run to the closest CVS. All they had was neon paint. And they, like, came back and they're like, okay, here's the concept we have. Like, I have been in this stupid kind of production meeting before, I'm telling you. I have been the PA who has run to the store to get the stupid paint. This is like what happened. They're like, okay, we'll come up with this whole stoplight versus big city narrative. And he can go in and, like, whoever is, like, personally producing James, they had the dumbest conversation ever and then walked into this date. That's what happened.
Yeah, that feels extremely correct. What he has are like basically two wooden boards that are like the same size, but one is like turned vertical and one is horizontal. And the vertical one has just three like lights.
It's a stoplight. Yeah.
It's a stoplight, painted a stoplight. And the other one has a cityscape painted in like the same like three colors as the stoplight.
Look, there were limited color options. You work with what you got, but he makes a lot out of a little.
He's like, you're from a one stoplight town. I'm from a concrete jungle that dreams are made from something, et cetera.
I definitely made up this line myself.
He's like, you know,
singing
a concrete
all
jungle.
The Jay-Z lyrics he can come up with.
And he's like, so don't you just feel like you're at home now? It's a little taste of home. And she's like, yeah, great. Thank you. And she tells him a little bit about growing up in a 700-person rice farming town. And she says, now I'm in Nashville. It's nice to have, like, be in a more, like, big city setting. But I'm still driving distance, and I like that. I wouldn't want to be any further. If they were really serious about each other in any way, this would be a moment for a conversation of, like, you live in Manhattan. I live in Nashville, and that's the furthest I'm willing to go from home. Like, what would a step forward be? And instead, James is like, wow, like, isn't it just crazy how, like, because of this experience, like, nowhere else would we have crossed paths and, like, the world brought us together. And she's like, yeah, it's crazy how people can just be meant to be.
She's like, I'm trying to respond to this gamely, but...
Without saying that we are meant to be the two of us in the same place at this moment.
She's like, yes, I guess I I was meant to be here. You were meant to be
here as well.
Close-ish physical proximity to me.
Can I just but say, he gets I love Tia.
I do too. I am so, her energy is incredible. She's just like, whatever.
She is like, keeps it 100 all the time. She's so funny. And she's nice. Like, she was trying to be nice to him, but she was like, what the fuck are you talking? And she tried to roll with it, but like couldn't even really roll with it. She was just like, sure, let's kiss. Okay.
She's a classic, like, not good at faking it in these scenarios.
I love that about her.
Yeah. And so they kiss, and then we see Tia saying, James is great, but sometimes you just have to listen to your vagina. And when James kissed her, it didn't dance like it did for Blake. So
it is. Look, it is what it is.
What kind of?
Yeah, I think we actually have a clip of this. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, of course. You want to head out?
Yeah, let's go. So cute.
I'm conflicted, of course. My heart is leading me toward James, who is such a great person overall. But sometimes you just have to listen to your vagina. Kissing Blake makes my vagina dance and tingle and feel really nice. And as nice as tonight was with James, when we kiss, I just don't feel a tingle in my vagina. So, okay, listen, this is very important. On one hand, we got someone that really makes you dance in there. On the other hand, we got someone that's really, really nice and sweet and great, and you're not really feeling much. So I need you to help me make this decision, because it's really important.
It was a moment. She says vagina a lot, and she implores the vagina to help her make a decision between this great, sweet guy and the guy who makes her vagina happy. And I just have to say, I think the vagina is already doing its part here. Meanwhile, let's talk about Marissa and Riley. Marissa is ready to
have the conversation.
Yeah. See if he can dig a little deeper. She's like, I have some trust issues from my past. And so I really need to know why he's not being open with me. And so, of course, she takes him to a daybed.
Okay, so this was another editing moment where I was like, what in the world? You two are like practically married. How have you not talked all day?
Okay.
That conversation was weird because it made it seem like they hadn't even been around each other at all for like 24 hours.
Yes, this was one of those conversations where, where they talk like they haven't been around each other all day. On the other hand, I do actually see my husband all day every day now. And sometimes I still ask him how his day was just because I'm like desperate to have something to say. Like, it's dinner time. How was your day? I was here.
Also, I think sometimes like they will be off with friends. Like some people will be in the pool and some people will be working out and or like someone will go take a nap. Like, I think it is possible to have like not seen each other for a few hours. It was strange watching you talk to Damar. It got more real. I thought I'd handle it better, but I'm into you, basically, is what he says. Yeah.
He's like, I hope she lets him know I'm the guy, and that's just how it is. And he says, I wrote you a rap song. I don't do that. And she whispers, it was dope.
I love the two of them.
They're so sweet together.
And Marissa kind of says, like, I want to know why you've been sort of closed off with me. And this is where he talks about his family, which, as Rebecca, as you said, we did get a bit of this during the Klaysha season from him. But he says, it's hard to explain. As much as I want a family, my family situation has never been great, and that really scares me. He says that his parents got divorced when he was young. His dad was kind of shitty to his mom. And ultimately kept him and his brother away from their mom for many years. And when he got older, he sort of realized this dynamic, made up with his mom, and now has not spoken to his father in years.
I thought this was really, as far as like ABC has been completely dropping the ball on this, as far as like race goes. I think back to the Kenny and Lee situation where they really did, they failed Kenny in that situation, and they really, they set him up, and that was not cool. And I think jumping forward, especially after everything that happened with Matt, which was with his parents, and like how like cringy that was, I really appreciated that Riley was able to have this conversation on his own terms. And however they edited it, they didn't edit to make him seem like angry black man, damaged black man. Like, he was able to just say, like, really hurtful things happen in my life, and I'm trying to process them, and I'm trying to find love while processing them. I was actually crying a little bit during this moment, because seeing Riley get this upset,
seeing him cry, was so emotional.
I think that was really important, and it wasn't over something like silly, and it wasn't like a like an angry toxic masculinity moment. It was like a pleasant, vulnerable moment with his partner, and they're trying to like talk this out. I was actually thinking a lot about Dean too when we saw what happened with Dean's father, and like I think a lot of the drama in Bachelor Paradise or in Bachelor franchise is like surface level or just like what happened at Stagecoach, but to see, you know, Dean's father having like mental health issues and like stuff with his siblings and his mom, like that was really real heavy stuff. And so I was thinking of Dean and Riley and what it means to show men going through actual traumatic stuff with their families, and like how they're handling that, and how on shows like this, it needs to be handled with care too.
Yeah, I think that this was a great example of the show, as you said, kind of just like allowing this conversation to play out without sort of making it like a build up to trauma bonding, or like, now is the moment where you must disclose whatever horrible thing happened to you. Like, it really felt like, yeah, this is an appropriate moment in the evolution of this particular relationship for some of these conversations to be had. Talking about families is something that inevitably comes up when you're talking about how you are in your relationships. It's certainly something I've spoken about with my partner. It was like one of those rare moments on reality television where you really feel like you're getting insight into someone, and you're really seeing a completely genuine moment of human emotion. And it was beautiful. And I agree that like some of the moments when this show is at its best is when it does allow men to have a venue for vulnerability and for expressing emotion and being given compassion, and sort of being affirmed for expressing that emotion. And I thought this was a beautiful example of that.
And he's not being set up for this woman or love is going to heal me. It's a story of someone who's working on healing himself or going through the healing process, and now in a place where he's ready to fall in love as a more whole person, or having worked through issues. And I really appreciate that, because I feel like so many times there's that sort of romantic idea that it's the woman's job to fix what's going on or fill that gap or something for the man, to be the caretaker, like you were saying. And Riley is taking care of himself. He's taken time. It seems obvious to me that he's had therapy, and he's really learned to talk through things, and he's reached a better place in his life, even if it's not complete, and it probably never will be. But he's reached a place where he's ready to fall in love, and it made me really believe in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then they get through this part of the conversation. And, you know, they talk about, he says, I really want you to meet my mom. She'd love you. And this makes Marissa feel really great about their future. And then she says, I want you to be my man. I love waking up to you. And then she gets like a bit stalled. She's like, this is really hard for me. It's really hard. And he says, it's hard for me too. And they take a moment, and she says, I'm falling in love with you. And he says he's falling in love with her.
Oh, so cute.
It was so cute. I was like, oh, this baby.
I know. It's like, yay, we got some nice romance. It made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. I loved it. I loved the two of them individually. I love them together. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I think we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Can you keep up? I like love it. So then we have some ominous thunder, clouds on the horizon. Everyone is gathered for breakfast, thinking about the rose ceremony that night. And suddenly, here come some dudes in navy t-shirts and headsets. So yeah, we know they're not supposed to be on camera.
One of them is, I believe, Peter, who's one of like the executive producers. Like, these are people who like do not come out. They're not the ones who are like really individually producing. Like, these are the head people.
Right. They're usually in a room somewhere.
Right, exactly. Everyone seems like startled. They all like know like something's going on. And basically they're like, look, I know you're expecting there to be a cocktail party and rose ceremony tonight, but unfortunately that will not be happening. There's a dangerous tropical storm rapidly approaching. And as of an hour ago, it's headed straight for us. So for the safety of the cast and crew, we're recommending that we evacuate immediately. It is no longer safe for you guys to stay in paradise. I don't want any of you to panic. I'm like, they're definitely all panicking. But I do need you to head across the beach and pack your bags right away. Like, we need to start evacuating.
We're all going to die. Right.
Yeah. Love how clearly scripted this was. Like, they were like, this is going to be a shot in the show. We need to write like a little speech for you to leave that's like really emphasizes this tropical storm is heading straight for us. And it's actually no longer safe for you guys to be in paradise anymore. Like, that's going to be great in a teaser.
I just was wondering, where is Lil Jon? Like, is he in a bunker? They've taken him to a secure location.
Yeah, actually, Lil Jon him like, in every day. He's not there at all.
Like, I am too precious to be put in the eye of the storm. Like, no, it's my day off.
He was already back in Atlanta. And then he was like, I'll come back in a couple of days.
He's like, I'm too expensive for you to have me stay here all the time for like 3 days. Like, you can fly me in when I have to give a little routine, little speech. And everyone looks very freaked out. And I have to say, they make a very leisurely evacuation across the beach. They're all like, oh my God, we have to go. Anyway, like, should we just like walk over? Or and then they walk very slowly across the sand, like just holding a hand. I was like, none of you look like you're in any sort of urgent evacuation moment.
The only people who express any urgency are like all of the field producers who are like trying to cover everything with tarps and like lay big columns on their sides so things don't get completely destroyed. Like, they're like running around and the cast is like, where's my third straightener? It must be over here somewhere.
Why did I bring all of these straighteners? It's so much to pack.
We do eventually, though, get into the vans. They seem to be divided by gender. Yeah. And I assume they're being taken off to, like, the main hotel area further from the beach. Who knows?
Serena and Joe keep saying dramatically, like, we don't know when we'll see each other again.
Yeah, I was like, do you all understand that, like, you are allowed to speak when you're not in Mexico? Yeah. Like, it was so weird. They're like, we'll never see each other again.
I actually was, okay, so we cut to commercial break. Everyone has been packed off in the vans. There's nightfalls, lightning, tumultuous winds. And then we're back. It's daytime. Sunny, and everyone is back. I was like, where's the footage from evacuation time? I want to know. Like, that was the very anticlimactic evacuation.
I know. I would have loved seeing them like running around the halls, like, you know, or like being isolated in their rooms. Like, we can't talk to each other.
They're just back. And Serena is like, the storm is gone. Paradise is back in session. And here we are. Lil Jon is waiting for them on the beach.
He has flown back from Atlanta.
I think we have a clip of what he says because I did not want to try to say it myself.
Welcome back with everybody. Okay.
And he tells them the cocktail party is in an hour. And so everyone, the women all get out their little compacts and the men all tousle their hair and put on their going out tops.
I was like, they must be thrilled that this is starting in the daytime, which means that it probably won't end at like 4 a.m.
Unless it's just a really long cocktail party. Oh, yeah.
It's a like 20-hour cocktail party.
Start the day drinking. I mean, why not?
The men all cross the beach in dramatic single file, like a very long Abbey Road. And four of them are going home. So tensions are high. Blake and James are competing for Tia, both by just exposing a lot of pec and neck area. Blake is in a mostly unbuttoned shirt. And James is wearing like a very open-necked black tee and black pants. It's sort of like...
It's like he borrowed the boat neck from, who was it, Ben last year? Who yeah. this season was always wearing that boat yes. neck tee. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out I kept having this feeling like he looks just like, and I was like, a ballet dancer doing stage crew, like someone dressed up as a sexy French waiter. Like, I don't know, but it was like, and Ivan doesn't have a romantic connection, but just like hoping something works out so he can stay and meet someone next week.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just gonna throw myself at a woman or two and see what sticks, I guess.
I hate this for Ivan. I want him to have the dignity to be like, paradise is not the place for me to find love. I'm leaving.
Ivan, it's okay. Just be like, look, it's been real, but my little heart can't take it anymore, and I'm going to exit with my head held high. Instead, we're going to get him just like having the saddest, most like desperate downfall, especially judging from the preview for next week. It's like, this is not going well.
Ivan got a really weird edit this season, and yes. got a really weird edit considering how hot he is. Like, he's so hot, and they gave him like ugly guy edit, and you're like, why? Like, why is Ivan almost in none of the episodes? Like, he has none of his arcs. Like, even his friendship with like DeAndre, like we didn't really get to see them having like one-on-one conversations. Like, his edit this season has been terrible.
Yeah, it's almost like they cut out things that we would have needed to see to understand other people's stories, just so they could cut Ivan out. Like, it almost feels that pointed how little he's been in certain points of the season. And personally, I want Ivan to have a big starring role on Paradise, or I want him to be like, I'm too good for this.
Exactly.
This is just like bumming me out. Lil Jon comes out I think this is his last moment as host. And Lil Jon does just like a little routine, a little like comedy routine. He's doing some crowd work. He's like, so I heard the word love was being used. Anyone use the word love? And Joe's like, we did. And Joe says it was spur of the moment, but it felt right. And this I hated what Joe said next.
I hated this so much.
He says, last time on the show meant a lot to me. And this time I'm starting to realize might mean a little bit more. I was like, why would you say any part of this? Like, Kendall's gone. Like, first of all, you're bringing up the specter of Kendall to Serena, who doesn't want to hear about it. And then you're using it to be like, but you're better than
you're better.
Kendall.
Like, I was just like, you don't have to do that. You can just be like, I'm so excited to be here with Serena. You don't need to say, and she's better than Kendall. Like, it just made me feel really sad. And I was like, this is just a thing that Kendall is going to see when it airs. And just feel unnecessarily hurt by it.
And I don't think that it would be that great for Serena to hear. So, like, what's the point?
Right. It's not like so effective. It's just like, yeah, it's totally unnecessary. And I think overall, Joe has done a really good job of being respectful of everyone. I was just like, ugh, that sucked.
Just
and
like,
was,
leave
it's
it.
Not, we didn't need that.
So then Lil Jon is like, Tia, you got James and Taddy Daddy. One of them won't get a rose, and then he'll be a saddy daddy. So, and with that, Lil Jon leaves.
He's like, that's my line. That's I will not be here all night, folks. Goodbye. Yes.
But Tia now has to deal with her love triangle. She's upset because Blake is the one she's actually into, but he has shown no actual interest in winning her over. And she's like, there's a rose on the line. He still isn't acting like he cares about me at all. But she's not willing to just like kind of let it go and give her rose to James, because there's still that part of her, the part that I think keeps ending up, as she says, in relationships with guys who don't give a shit. That's like, I'm going to tell him that he needs to give a shit and that will be productive. She's like, effort, that's all you can do. And Blake kind of gives her flirty brows and is like, oh, is it? And she's like, yeah, have you been putting in effort, Blake? And he's like, yeah, I have. And she's like, today? And at this point, Damar excuses himself.
Yeah, Damar's like, I'm not staying here for this. I don't need this energy in my life.
He's like, my role in this is done, I think. And Tia is like, Blake, I want to be pursued. I want to be chosen. I want to be made to feel special. And you're not really doing that for me.
This was another thing with the edit. And I feel like a little bit later when Ivan drops a little nugget. I want to know what happened during evacuation time with these two. Because I don't think they were actually kept apart. And we've only seen them on a date once. So he was like, I've said all this stuff to you, which, of course, we never saw. And so I'm wondering, like, if it was a Marissa Riley thing where, like, they maybe actually had a trip to a Boom Boom Room of their own and they've hooked up. And she's like, we've done all this stuff, but you haven't actually done anything else beyond that. Because Tia was heated.
She was mad.
And like he was really defensive. So I was like, something else happened.
Yeah, like,
here
what did we miss here? Oh, I do. That is interesting. I do wonder if they had some sort of sexy interaction during.
See, my read on this was, I like Tia, but I think she does kind of the opposite thing that Marissa did in their conversation, where she says to Blake, "Here's what I need from you," and then she doesn't like step back. But he needs the space to do the thing that she wants him to do. Like,
he's not going to be able to do the action in this conversation.
Right. The conversation is not going to produce the action that she needs. And she's allowed to want that, of course. But like, when is he going to do it now? Like, is this just a conversation to yell at him and they're over? Or is this a conversation where she's letting him know that he needs to put in effort? Because if so, she then needs to give him a moment to do that.
And I feel like that the moment already happened and we didn't see it. So this is the aftermath of, like, I told you 3 days ago to do X, Y, and Z after we had sex, maybe, or made out a lot. And then you didn't do it. And you've just been kind of hanging around thinking you have it in the bag. And I want you to be more romantic. And I've given you an opportunity to do it. And you're not. And he's probably like, we were stuck in a hotel and all I could do was like order you chicken fingers that I wasn't paying for. Like, so I'm sure he's like, I haven't even gotten a chance to do a grand gesture. We've been like stuck in a hotel this whole time.
Yeah. Like the way she makes it sound is like she wanted him to like grab her as soon as the party started. And then a little time went by and he hadn't yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Tessa?
Just going off of what we saw, I felt very sympathetic for Tia in this. I feel like she's not an unreasonable person, just from going off the way she speaks, and she seems very honest and direct. And I think she hurt his pride in front of his friends. And he wanted her to feel bad about it. That's how I read that whole argument that they had on the daybed, because he's saying over and over again, I don't know what more I could do. I don't know what I could say. And she's actually kind of giving him ideas, but he's not really. This would have been so easy for him to fix. Just say, oh, I'm really sorry. You know what? Let me grab a bottle of wine and two glasses and we'll go over here and we'll have our moment or something. I really feel like it would not have been difficult for him to smooth that over. But I think his pride was hurt and he wanted it to come across as her fault. And he seemed to me really sulky and resentful and unnecessarily angry about what could have been a small miscommunication that got solved.
That's a really good point, because I do think it seemed like she wasn't giving him the space, but that doesn't mean he handled the conversation well, because whenever she said, I need action, he would say like, well, but I'm saying the right things, which is clearly not a response to what she's saying. It was the most circular conversation.
It got them absolutely nowhere. And I was like, okay, so this is going to basically be probably the end of this little dalliance.
Unless he makes her vagina feel, I mean, like an exponential amount better than James does, which I don't know. That's the wild card here.
Yeah. I feel like Tia's headed at some point for just a like, nah, I'm not finding love here. Like, Goodbye.
I want her and Ivan to just be like, we deserve better.
Yeah, we deserve better. It's time for us to go.
Tia sits down with James after this, it seems like, and says very pointedly to him, there's no one else there, thank you for doing something the other night in the treehouse because it doesn't go unnoticed. And he's like, great. Thank you.
Poor James is just like, I'm always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah. So he and Ivan and Aaron are kind of chilling.
Aaron is very much like, I want to keep pursuing Chelsea. He thinks she's, quote, a sweet girl and beautiful.
She's sweet and beautiful.
Wow.
And so he steals her away from the bar to give her a special moment.
A runway challenge.
He's like, I was trying to put myself in. He was like, I know you're a model, so I thought I would do some runway for you. Aaron's flirtation style is something to see because he's trying to make it about Chelsea right now. But fundamentally, what he's set up is an opportunity for her to watch him performing.
Although she seems to be into it.
She's
like,
totally
I think that
into it.
Aaron seems to be someone who's just like goofy and charming, like from the response that other people seem to be giving him on the beach consistently. Like he seems to be someone who's pretty easy to like, to have fun with, to laugh with. And then he's like
very away with being not a very attentive partner, at least in the beginning, by being so much fun. And then eventually you start to be like, does he ever ask me a question about myself?
Who can say? But he is very complimentary of Chelsea. He's just like, yes, wow, you're such a beautiful model. You're so good at this. And meanwhile, Ivan is clearly like, huh, that Chelsea over there doesn't seem fully locked down. Maybe I can get a rose.
Do you guys think that Aaron is genuinely into Chelsea? Ivan is sitting over here being like, I don't think he's really into Chelsea.
I actually think he is.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is either.
Really? I kind of thought he was.
I mean, I think he should be. She's gorgeous. But like the way that he actually interacts with her does not make me think he's into her.
I think he likes her. I think he likes her as a friend. I don't think we're not in like Brendan Natasha territory or anything. I don't think he's smitten. Like, I think he thinks she's beautiful. I think he likes hanging out with her, but I don't think he's like, I'm going to wife her up. I think he's just staying with her probably to the end of this, and then they probably won't talk again afterwards.
Frankly, I think very few of these like relationships, anything that's sort of fresher, I kind of think no one's like wifing the other one up a little bit.
No, but
so
you can like continue to pursue. Like to me,
yeah.
To me, Chelsea is Aaron's option. She is his only option. Like Chelsea's saying things to him like, oh, I really gravitate towards you in groups. Like I was on my date and I wanted to get back and talk to you. And he's saying to her, like, well, you're beautiful. You're clearly the full package. So it's great to hear that you're into me. Like that's basically what he said to her.
When they kissed, it was like when they were doing after the little runway challenge, he like walked up to her and kissed her, and it was a moment of like, okay, now we kiss.
Yes.
Not a like, I'm really into you and I love being in your like proximity, and like kissing right now feels like the natural thing to do. It was like, okay, now we kiss. And it was
that's sort of the energy we've gotten with Aaron and like all of his various relationships.
I do think that I have yet to see Aaron in, I mean, I think the closest was Tammy. I think that's the closest we've seen him to being like, I choose this person because I'm genuinely into them. And even then we didn't see a lot. So
lackluster. I feel like Chelsea's just like, hey, I'm here to make out with a bunch of hot dudes. None of these guys are going to be my boyfriend. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Even with Aaron, like, she was giving me more than Aaron was giving, but it was still sort of like, I like hanging out with you. Like, you're fun. Yeah. Nothing passionate. But Chelsea does at this point seem to be trying to feel out whether Ivan's interested in her. And she's like, have you ever had even a single thought about me? And he's like, Chelsea, you're beautiful. You're easy to talk to. What do you mean? I've had a whole lot of thoughts.
They were, this to me felt very summer camp in a good way. Like they were like, we're in a corner, not hidden, by the way. Like these are the two kids you catch making out by a tree out in the open. And you're like, everyone can see you. Like they didn't even.
I have said for years that Paradise is essentially the summer camp of the Bachelor franchise. I was like that. Yeah. I always am like, that's how people fall in love so quickly. It's like
by making out next to a tree.
Yes, by making out next to a tree and having nothing else to do or think about.
The makeout is also very Hays Code. It's like they kiss, they pull away, they peck, they kiss, they pull away. And meanwhile, Aaron and James are observing all of this.
This is where I start to get excited because I know I'm going to get some classic Aaron lines. I mean.
So the problem with Aaron for me is when he gets really mad, I feel like his insults devolve a little bit. Like he's so mad. And James is like, he's rose hunting, bro. He's just rose hunting. And Aaron's like, I know, but he's such a little fucking bitch. I will slap that stupid beard off his face. That guy's such a little snaky bitch bag. And I'm like, you're just saying bitch a lot.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know.
Come on.
I'm not as Aaron,
we know you're more creative. We know you should be more creative.
I will say little snaky bitch bag is probably a more creative spin on bitch than we would see from many of the men. So
that's true. It's not just little bitch.
Right.
So it's really just taking the form and evolving it. And I guess I do appreciate that.
Is it like a hybrid like bitch and douchebag? Is bitch bag like something the kids are saying these days? And I just haven't heard it.
I don't think so. Just the errands.
I thought of it as just like a bag full of bitch, you know, like just bitch energy. Trapped in a bag.
A bag full of bitch.
So James says, tell him how you feel, brah. And Aaron says, easily done. And he heads over to where Ivan is standing by the bar and shouts up to him from the beach. Quick word, bro. Can I have a quick word down here? Can you come down here? So Aaron goes up to the bar and gets in Ivan's face and says, you told me over there at that table that you weren't going to steal anyone's rose. So what was that with Chelsea? And Ivan's like, yeah, I meant that, but like Chelsea surprised me. And Aaron says, bitch move.
Here's the thing about all of this is Aaron reminds me, he's like super frat bro energy. But I think what we need to do is rewind to Tasia's season where we met Ivan's family. And we met specifically Ivan's brother. And I'm willing to bet that Ivan can actually fight. I'm just going to put that out there. Like, if we're going to be honest about, like, who can really fight. And I feel like Ivan was actually giving him a moment of, like, Aaron, I love you. You don't actually know that I can knock you out. And I don't know that you actually want to go there with me. And Ivan decided he wanted to get more puffed up. If this was in the streets, I'd be like, fight. But I thought it was really interesting because Aaron likes to get loud with people who don't throw punches. Mm-hmm. And I think this was a moment of like, honey, you actually don't know me like that. And you don't know, like, my brother is a thug. I hang out with like actual thugs. Like, I don't think you actually want to have this fight with me.
Yeah, Aaron definitely is talking a little, like, in his interview, like, he's a desperate little bitch boy. He's built like a chopstick. I'll snap him in half. And I'm like, I know that you're, like, buff, Aaron, but have you been in a fight? Like, we've seen you, yeah, like, jawing off at a lot of guys.
Aaron just likes to yell, and he's tall. That's it. And we end on this fight with a to be continued. I'm like, oh, good. Just what we need. Even more of this exchange in another week. Fantastic.
You missed Aaron's best line where they're like toe to toe with each other. And they're like, what you going to do? What you going to do? And Aaron says, why's your lip quivering? My favorite part.
Oh my God.
Now there's a romance novel
just, like,
line.
He's painting a picture.
That's where I was like, okay, now kiss. It was like
that would be the greatest twist to ever exist on this show. That I could get on board with. I don't want to see them beat the shit out of each other, but I would like to see them make out.
Yeah. So. I wish for once Aaron would go up to a man and kiss him instead of trying to start a fight with him.
I'm not defending Aaron. I just find it very amusing. And he never takes it out on the woman, which I do appreciate. He always goes, you know, he doesn't seem to have any anger toward Chelsea in this situation, which...
Yet, but we did see him
oh dear.
Carry a lot of anger towards Tammy. Well, what's weird to me, the Tammy thing was particularly bad. We haven't seen how this plays out. He didn't talk to Tammy directly. He acted like Thomas was the active player in that, even though he had no, like, friendship with Thomas.
And Tammy literally, like, went and mounted Thomas.
Right. I actually feel like he should have addressed that directly with Tammy first. He didn't. He went to Thomas, the other man. But then he was really mad and mean to Tammy about it as well.
I guess you're right. All right, I'll stop defending Aaron.
It's harder to hate Aaron than a lot of people on the show, no matter what he does, because he is so good with his words and he's so fun to watch.
And that's, I think, where we need to end.
Rebecca, Tessa, thank you so much for joining us. Can you let everyone know where to find you and the latest books from you that they should check out?
Well, my website's tessadera.com. I'm on Twitter mostly as my preferred social of choice, and it's just at tessadera, one word. My most recent book is called The Wallflower Wager. I write historical romance that's sort of Bridgerton and aesthetic. We'll just say that.
You can find me at RebeccaWeatherspoon.com. I'm on Twitter mostly too. It's r.spoon spelled out. And my next book is A Thorn in the Saddle. That's book 3 in the Cowboys of California. And they're all fairy tale retellings about three brothers who run a luxury ranch in Southern California. So that'll be out in October.
Oh, hell yes. Okay. Well, I've got a lot of books to buy, clearly.
Yes.
Thank you both for joining us. This has been such a delight. And we hope that you will come back again and recap again
with
us.
This was so much fun. Thank you.
And now it's time for Love to See It, Hate to See It. Let's start, as always, with Love to See It. We love to see a bold floral top. And so Lil Jon really brought it for us this episode, and I loved that.
Me too. It was really working for me. Like, love to see that from Lil Jon. We also love to see Riley and Marissa's relationship getting a serious romantic moment in the spotlight. It was so beautiful. We were tearing up watching it. It was really lovely to see Riley be able to, you know, have a conversation that was deep and vulnerable and didn't feel so chopped up by the editors or exploited.
Beautiful. And also, Natasha seemingly having a great date with Ed, although I'm sort of like, Ed? Really?
Ed? But that guy?
I salute her happiness. I wish for it. And I love to see it.
Now it's time for Hate to See It. We hate to see Kendall being emotionally tortured by watching her ex fall in love with a 23-year-old and Joe then making an unnecessary reference to his time with Kendall while announcing to the whole group that he's falling in love with Serena more than he fell in love with Kendall. Just hate to see it.
Big yikes. And hate to see sour cream near anyone's genitals or
leg hair.
I mean, I guess it's, I don't know for sure if it was sour cream. It definitely looked like a crema sort of sauce. Near genitals, leg hair rubbed into, licked off their bodies, trickling down a quivering thigh. Hate to see it.
Just like no dairy products that could possibly curdle.
Why is it always dairy?
On the body this way.
I just don't understand.
It's not, we don't need it. I don't know. I don't understand. I'm not, we don't like it. Stop. We also hate to see climate change coming for paradise. It's just a dark reminder of the state of our planet and how we have destroyed it.
Indeed. Also, finally, hate to see Ivan being reduced to rose hunting on this show. I would love to see Ivan leave on his own terms at this point. This is the decision he's made, and I truly hate to see that it's come to this for his time on Paradise.
And finally, of course, we have our crabby rating. There was some, like a moderate amount of crab footage. They did get the honor of that opening shot. They set the scene. But, you know, they never really got to take center stage. So what do we say, Claire? Like a 5?
I think we could say a 5 is fair. Just the honor of that opening shot, you know, that central initial metaphor, that counts for something. And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire. Thanks to our lovely guests, Tessa Dare and Rebecca Weatherspoon.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Kate Moldenauer. Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like the show, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review. More importantly, tell all your friends who used to listen to us as Here to Make Friends. Help us get the word out about our new name.
And if you want to get in touch, you can email us at claireandemmapod@gmail.com with your questions and voice memos. We might even feature you in an upcoming mailbag.
You can also find us on Twitter at @LoveToSeeItPod and Instagram at @ClaireandEmmaPod.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
We'll be back next week for even more drama on the beach.
Stitcher.